I have always believed in miracles.
And that is why you will never hear me mention his name.
Deliver Brexit.
It's about finding a pathway forward.
News on News with Mark Latham.
It's the leader of One Nation in New South Wales. He joins me each and every Thursday afternoon. Mark Latham. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks, Brent. How are you going?
I'm okay, mate. I'm all right. What did you think? I suppose the first thing we've got to talk about is the People's Forum. People are calling it the debate last night. What was your thoughts on the whole thing?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting, I suppose, if you're into politics. There was more discussion about policy than we've heard otherwise in the election campaign. Albanese coming off a low base seemed to go reasonably well, except the one blooper about boat turnbacks in 2013 when he didn't seem to know what the coalition policy or record was or what he was doing as Deputy Prime Minister, and he's copping a pounding for that today. So any error by Albanese was going to be very costly because it comes on top of his disastrous first week in the campaign when he didn't know if he was Arthur or Martha. But overall, I think it was pretty even. Albanese was okay on most of the issues. Morrison threw the switch heavily to China, saying Labor was on China's side. I'm not too sure that's 100% correct. It was a vicious debating point, especially when, you know, the Morrison government hasn't held Solomon Islands away from the Chinese. So, yeah, I think it was interesting for people who watched it, but it's on Sky News where obviously it's not free to air. Not everyone gets access to it, and you've got to read the newspapers to get a few snippets.
I just couldn't believe that Anthony Albanese would, you know, when he was the Deputy Prime Minister, would forget about, you know, details like that, as he did most obviously last night.
Yeah, he made two mistakes last week about temporary protection visas and offshore processing, and now, to complete the trifecta, he's made a mistake about turnbacks. There's only three elements to border protection, and he's made a mistake in all three areas. But I think it's because, you know, I can tell you from when I was in the Federal Labor scene in Canberra, his heart of heart is not in border protection. He's an open door sort of guy. He thinks the humanitarian decision is to let everyone in and process their families and resettle them in Australia. And we know under Rudd and Gillard that was disastrous because the leaky boats sank, 2,000 people drowned at sea, and it was the greatest humanitarian disaster in Australian peacetime history. So if he hasn't learned that lesson, I think what happens with him is because his heart is not in the policy, he gets all confused, and the connection between his brain and his heart breaks down, and he makes these errors.
There was some figures that were thrown around this morning. He filled in as acting Prime Minister for 3 days in, I think it was, you know, was it 2013 or 2015? And in that three-day period, there were 159, And in the next 8 years, once, you know, the Liberal government got in, the coalition got in, there were less people turned back in 8 years than there was, or less people come in, sorry, in 8 years than what there was over that three-day period.
Yeah, the Abbott government turned around 30 boats. Labor never turned around any. And Abbott, to his credit, with Morrison as the immigration minister, dried up the flow of the boats. And it's an evil trade. It's people smugglers preying off the unfortunates who want to get away from persecution, they say. There's an argument that they've already found refuge when they get to Indonesia. But they pay the money to get on the boats. The boats sank. And thankfully, Abbott and Morrison brought that to an end. But the record for Labor is disgraceful. And from a campaign perspective, these three Albanese errors have meant that border protection's back in the headlines. You know, who would have thought 8 years after the flow of boats stopped that this would be a mainstream issue? Well, with Albanese's record and mistakes, I suppose it needs to be an issue. And people probably have got a choice. If you want strong border protection, you're better off with the existing government than going with Anthony Albanese.
Let's talk about the Solomon Islands situation, because that, of course, was talked about last night as well. Julie Bishop said yesterday that Foreign Minister Maurice Payne should get on the next flight to the Solomon Islands and basically try and find out what's going on with the deal with China. I think the plane's left on that one, hasn't it? It's all too late.
Yeah, they've signed the deal, and I suppose it's the basic case of money talks. I don't rate Maurice Payne all that highly, and if she'd gone there, it mightn't have made any difference at all. The reality is that China has outbid Australia and the United States and every other country throwing money at the Solomon Islands. And the islands have signed up for this deal where they get a whole stack of money and the Chinese can base some military facilities in the Solomons, which is bad news for Australia. It's a big worry. But I don't think there was any way Australia could outbid the Chinese. They're throwing, you know, billions at these Pacific islands and elsewhere to try and buy influence.
Yeah, look, the Prime Minister said of, you want to get a glass of water?
Yeah, no, I've got one. Yeah, I've been down in budget estimates, talking, asking questions and a few arguments with Dominic Perrottet. So, yeah, the old voice, plus I've had a cough, non-COVID. So, yeah, I'm starting to struggle a bit, but I'll stick in there.
You'll soldier on. Scott Morrison has defended the decision to send the junior burger, as they call him, instead of Maurice Payne to the Solomon Islands. He said, I'm very conscious of how visits are perceived within the Pacific. This was the right calibrated way to address this issue with the Prime Minister. Now, do you think this is just an excuse, or do you think that Scott Morrison actually really does believe that?
I think it's a bit of an excuse. Maybe the smarter thing was to say to all these Pacific Islands, what we can learn for the future is we give you a whole stack of money for foreign aid. We help some of these places with their vaccination program. We have given some form of assistance on the climate change front, not that any of these islands are sinking into the ocean. The sea levels aren't really rising. But I think the smart thing for Australia going forward is to say to these countries, look, we'll give you the foreign aid, but you've got to give us an assurance that you won't be signing up with China.
Yeah.
Because the Solomon Islands has taken a stack load of money off Australia, got a better offer from China, and signed up, and they basically had the best of both worlds. They took our money, plus the Chinese. They're rolling in this foreign aid that they've got. They now become a surrogate state of China, and Australia looks like a pack of idiots. We don't get a refund on the money we gave them. So I think going forward, whether it's Fiji or PNG or any other place, we've got to say, look, we'll give you this foreign aid budget over the next 5 years, but you've got a guarantee for the life of the budget, you're not going to sign up with China. Now, if you can't give us that guarantee and you're going to play us as mugs, well, what's the point in Australia giving them any support at all?
I think it was someone sent me an email yesterday, it was something like $2.5 billion over the past 10 years in foreign aid.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
Throwing money at these islands. They do have corruption in their government, but at the end of the day, they've been bought off by the Chinese and taken a more lucrative offer. But let's also remember, you know, Australia was part of this stupidity. Remember when the Victorian government, the Andrews government, did the Belt and Road
initiative?
I do. They
were going
to accept.
That's right.
Accept Chinese money for infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't want to be a surrogate state to China. That should never have happened. So Australia made some mistakes back when, and I think going forward we need to tie our foreign aid budget to a non-China independent foreign policy and say to these countries we're not going to be played as mugs as we were in the Solomon Islands.
Dan Andrews was welcomed by the Chinese with open arms, wasn't he?
Oh yeah, they loved it. They loved the idea, but it was humiliating for Australia. We're not a third world country that needs to go with a begging bowl to China. We should be able to fund our own roads and rail and port. Airport infrastructure. I just thought it was a low moment in Australia's standing. Thankfully, was it the Turnbull government that invalidated the Andrews Agreement or the Morrison government? But anyway, it's been invalidated. We're stuck with Chinese ownership of the Port of Darwin. That's a worry. It's obviously a worry what's happening in the Solomons. So we've just got to learn from these mistakes and find something better going forward.
How do you think today's Thursday? It's been, I suppose, well, it hasn't really been, it sort of was a short week. How do you think campaigns going for both leaders week two of this 6 week? What would you call it? I mean, it just seems to be going on and on and on.
Yeah, well, we're a bit over 4 weeks out, so it will end one day. Of May. Well, the campaign was interrupted, obviously, by Easter, an extended weekend. There'll be a campaign truce for Anzac Day next Monday. So really the highlight of the week, the campaign takeout that you could look at. Week one, Albanese's errors. Week two, the debate last night. They're really the things that are top of mind for anyone following the politics of it. So, you know, there's a lot of colour and movement and fluff that flies around, but they're the two big things. Albo's errors and whatever people think of the debate last night.
So you've been there, done that. What would have happened last night on both sides of politics after the debate? What would have happened with the two leaders?
Oh, they go back to their supporters and family and get an assessment of how they went.
So it's a debriefing.
Preparation. The bigger thing is in preparing.
Right,
that you have
right.
a mock debate. I remember I had someone imitating John Howard and what he might say, your practice. You obviously got to get across your facts and figures. But I can say an interesting thing about John Howard in the one debate I had against him in 2004. Howard didn't really win any of the debates against me or Kevin Rudd or Kim Beazley. And one of the reasons was he seemed to be incredibly nervous. Now, you wouldn't think someone had been in politics that long and he'd been 8 years Prime Minister when I debated him, but we went up to the lecterns and I looked over. I was a young fella and reasonably nervous about it all. And Howard was trembling. His hands were shaking. And I thought, well, if he's shaking, that makes me feel better. I'll relax. And it did relax me. So a lot of it is nervous energy. And I thought Scott Morrison at the beginning last night was a little bit nervous. They both would have been dreadfully nervous. But once that settles, you get into it. But it's the preparation that matters more than the post-mortem.
OK, now let's talk Matt Keane, if we can. Goodness me, this Catherine Deave situation, where will it end? I mean, she's gone very quiet, almost missing in action in the last couple of days. Can you see her persisting, or do you think the pressure will get to her and maybe she will opt out?
Well, nominations closed today, so I assume she's remained as the Liberal candidate for Warringah, but it's the most remarkable campaign because she's an absentee candidate. She's not actually doing anything out in the electorate, going to shopping centres or the ferry station or debate nights, community forums, because she would be swamped by the media that have so much interest in her. So for someone who's not actually campaigning, she's the best-known candidate in the whole election.
Yes, but
talking about her. Everyone's talking about her. So it's the most remarkable thing I've seen in local campaigns in politics, that you can have such a high profile effectively for doing nothing.
True, but we'll find out whether the old adage of any publicity is good publicity may be further down the track.
Well, she's tapped into an issue that is emerging. There's no doubt that transgender is on the rise in our school system. Young people in particular, some people say it's a fad. Attention seeking can be a prank. But it's also genuine. There's obviously a genuine group out there that are changing gender. But for parents, of course, it can be top of mind because it's a big challenge, isn't it? A huge decision that a young person can make, whether it's permanent or temporary. There are big issues about the protection of girls in sport. You don't want a 16-year-old Mitchell Johnson hurling down thunderbolts at girls in cricket. You don't want a 16-year-old Waria Hargraves running at girls in rugby league when it's supposed to be all girls competition. And you know, eventually you'd say a girl's going to be seriously injured in that sort of contest. You had our great Olympian Emma McKeon come out yesterday to say that she doesn't think it's fair competition. Brent, I was very struck by one of the American swimmers against that Leah Thomas, who got into the finals over there, the man who became a woman in the swimming. And there was a competitor who was ranked ninth because of Leah Thomas. And I heard an interview where she'd just missed the finals by one spot because this man converting to a woman took her spot. And she was distraught. So I've trained for this for 15 years. I got up every morning. I've competed. It's so unfair that a man has taken my spot in the finals. I might have finished last in the finals, but it would have been something I was proud of, and now I missed out because of this unfair competition. So it's an issue at elite sporting level. It's an issue out there on the parks and sporting grounds of the suburbs, and it's not going away.
It isn't. Let's take a break. We'll come back and give you a chance to talk about Matt Keane next, all right?
Yep, for sure.
Okay, we're talking to the leader of One Nation in New South Wales, Mark Latham. We'll take a break here.